the urban and architectural history of Venice, Italy. Quote, Venice made no pretenses to being an ideal city. It was merely the best that a succession of energetic merchants and industrialists who courted money and power on the luxuries that money and power will buy were able to conceive. Lewis Mumford. Throughout its existence, Venice and its people have had a unifying narrative, the struggle against water. Although the rising sea levels have resulted in death, destruction, and flooding, it has also served a valuable role as the collective antagonist of the Venetian people. It's human nature to band together when faced with a common challenge or adversity. Through necessity and under the constant threat of rising tides, Venetians developed ingenuity, a work ethic, and a common purpose. The bond created by this struggle has been one of the key ingredients to the progress and prosperity of Venice. Venice was initially established by people fleeing from the mainland Roman province of Veneta in order to avoid attack from the barbarians. They fled to the small lagoon where the marshlands provided natural protection and began building tiny houses out of wood on raised stilts to raise them above the rising tides. They learned to fish, harvest salt, and maneuver in the water with small boats. They were people of the sea. The site was ill-suited for settlement due to the marshy wetlands, changing tides, and large stratum of unstable soil. However, there were advantages they did not overlook. The islands provided safety and access to water for commerce and trade. The water around Venice performed the same role as large walls in similar cities at the time. The absence of man-made fortifications in Venice should not be overlooked. Many culturally prosperous civilizations that made considerable societal advancements settled in areas with natural fortifications. Athens and Egypt are both great examples. Perhaps when a wall is built around a city, it immediately induces a sense of fear, instability, conflict, and anxiety in its people, prohibiting them from entering a space of calm. They are too preoccupied with the potential threat of invasion when a wall is present. All their efforts and energy are focused on defense, rebuilding, and maintaining the wall. Anxiety permeates the society. The islands were so safe that the early settlers adapted their lifestyles to fit the site's unique characteristics, even if that meant extra work or unconventional practices. In many cases, they had no option but to create technologies to make the islands buildable, creating buildable land and growing the city together. The Venetians discovered that if they dredged the canals, making them more navigable by small boats called gondolas, they could use the excavated muck to add landmass to the existing islands. By adding landmass to the island, they could grow the buildable area of the city and facilitate population growth. Even with the growing landmass, Venice depended upon trade to obtain many necessities. Because of the limited area, it didn't have the expansive farmland to support its citizens. Although there were and still are small pockets of land where private owners and small commercial outlets can grow fruit, vegetables, and small livestock, this area is limited. Most of the food and material goods were provided by the mainland and sent by ship. At the time, shipping was the primary means of travel and trade, which made Venice easily approachable and a natural hub for trade. As Venice continued to grow, the individual islands of the archipelago began to grow together. Each island had a separate parish and established its self-sufficiency. Over time, the citizens would drain and rebuild the earth to gain more buildable land, leaving only the canals. In 1346, a map of Venice was produced, which shows the individual islands grown together to form a single landmass. When these landmasses began to grow together, the streets of each island did not necessarily align. Today, you will still find awkward, sharp corners throughout the city, which identify the historical boundary between the parish islands. Venice's street layout is unique, while most European cities that were part of the Roman Empire have traces of orthogonal or grid layouts, Venice does not. Installing a Roman grid was impossible because of its geographic location and unique condition as a series of islands. Today, the streets of Venice mimic an Islamic city's winding, dense layout, a clue to its Eastern influence. The city is dotted with many plazas and private gardens. the Piazza San Marco is one of the most famous at the city's core. It is an ancient Byzantine church. The organization of these components, which include the church with its square or campo, fountain, school, and guild hall, repeat throughout the city. Mumford makes a revealing observation regarding this pattern. With each island having the basic functional requirements to operate independently, Venice embodied the earliest form of mixed-use zoning, a contemporary planning principle and theory that many cities use today. Conventionally, especially in the modern industrial era, planners divided cities into different uses. For example, the residential area would be in one geographic location, business in another, industry in another, and so on. In Venice, each island had all of these components together in one because of its geographic constraints. It needed to allow residents of each island to access all components of daily life without having to move to the next island. Today, mixed-use zoning developments are popular because they promote pedestrian activity and bring different uses together in single buildings. For example, retail on the lower level with residential above. Much of its popularity has gained traction to limit the need for the automobile transportation in the modern city. According to Mumford, Venice was the first to implement this type of mixed-use city organization. Unfortunately, many cities did not replicate this concept until the recent century, when the widespread negative repercussions of the modern zone city and infatuation with the automobile were revealed. Building methods in Venice. Early Venetians used a unique method to construct the foundations of their buildings. They hammered large oak posts deep into the marshy clay soil of the lagoon in a grid pattern. Dalmatian oak was the most commonly used tree species for its resilient properties. The wood piles typically did not reach bedrock. Instead, they intended to create a platform that could move and flex with the shifting of the tides. Over time, the oak posts swelled and were preserved. All over Venice, the buildings were supported in this way. It is a practice that continues today. Even with these foundations, the city is steadily sinking due to the massive weight of the built structures and the removal of the artesian water from the lagoon's bedrock. Extensive site preparation was required to construct foundations. First, a solid boundary of oak piles was driven into the earth in the shape of a perimeter of the building's footprint. These piles were typically located directly next to each other, with no separation or space between them. Next, the earth inside of the footprint was excavated. Horizontal wooden planks were then fastened to the perimeter piles to form a solid vertical plank wall, designed to help keep water out of the interior foundation. Often, a moat was dug around the exterior, and any excess water inside of the foundation was drained. Once cleared, additional piles were driven inside of the foundation to support primary structural bearing walls. In some scenarios, where the soil was exceptionally poor, archaeologists discovered the entire interior footprint of the building filled with piles, leaving no space between them. Crushed brick, excess stone, and gravel were hauled and inlaid inside of the footprint to create a more stable underlayment. Rafts made of large planks and lime mortar were set on top of the crushed stone, typically with two layers laid perpendicular to each other. The building's foundation stones could then be set in this system. More expansive stone foundation walls can be found at the base, reducing in width as they grow taller. Istrian stone was typically used in the foundations up to the high water mark, as it was incredibly dense and impermeable. The stone would not allow water to weep vertically into the structure. Istria is a limestone, one of the most common stones in Venice's buildings. It is not local, nor are any stones. Thus, it needed to be shipped to the island, which could be done at an affordable price. Stonemasons used this material because, as mentioned, it was nearly impervious to water and weathered very slowly in the salty environment. The walls of most Venetian buildings are constructed with a dense internal brick layer. Bricks were readily available, economical, and lightweight. Several masons began producing the bricks on the mainland and would ship the material to the island. These same masons also produced the terracotta tiles for the roofs on most of the buildings in Venice. Many buildings' exterior brick walls were covered with stone cladding or stucco. Tiles or slabs of Istria stone and varying types of marble were also used as exterior cladding. Many prominent buildings in the city have ornamentation carved from exotic marbles of varying colors imported from the east, another nod to the city's eastern influence. Today, much of the plaster on the buildings is an array of warmer colors. Historically, most of the stucco was a warm red color, as it was made from ground terracotta or brick used in the rest of the city. The masons would grind up the Istria stone in more prominent buildings and add it to the lime base to create a white stucco in certain unique situations. Wood timbers were also used for the roof structures in most Venetian buildings. Because they only came in lengths of about 5 to 6.5 meters, many buildings in the city were dimensionally uniform. The width of the buildings was limited to the maximum dimension that the roof timbers could be fabricated in. Wood became a high-priced commodity in Venice due to its extensive use in building foundations and roof structures. The same oak beams were also used in Venetian shipbuilding, making it an incredibly lucrative industry. In 330 AD, Roman Emperor Constantine established a new capital of the empire in Byzantium. Byzantium would become the head of the Roman Empire in the east. Venice became part of the Eastern Roman Empire and began to find cultural and artistic inspiration in the east, focusing on Oriental nations rather than those in the west. Venice grew as the Eastern Roman Empire collapsed, and its commercial and trade economy increased. This fostered a true sense of independence and self-empowerment for the culture. Society in Venice began to thrive. A cosmopolitan and multicultural city was developing based upon trade. The city's artistic and aesthetic preferences embraced the exotic and colorful tastes of the East. Throughout the city, even today, you can see Eastern motifs in the architecture, art, and sculpture, and represented in the paintings preserved from that time. A city unlike any other. Venice's environmental and geographical constraints generated a unique human artifact that exists nowhere else. Its uniqueness has captured traders, royalty, explorers, and tourists for centuries. People worldwide flock to Venice because it is unlike any other city they have seen. Beyond its physical character is the city's society and culture, which are familiar yet curiously unique. It has built a culture of resiliency and self-reliance, a culture that understands the power of human collaboration and coming together. It has had to rely on that commodity for mere survival. When we admire the surviving outward form, we must not forget the persistence of the inner trauma, the trauma of civilization itself, the association of mastery and slavery, of power and human sacrifice. Lewis Mumford. I believe Mumford was stating a truth that can be seen in many cities worldwide and within the individual human being. Cities that slowly evolve against the friction of environmental challenges, necessity, and unique hardships generate an organism that is sound, resilient, tested, and unique. These characteristics cannot simply be injected into a city by the hand of a master planner or architect. They must be instilled, tested, and steeped for centuries to find out what works, devise unique solutions, and build an inner strength and support the weight of a civilization. Contrast this with many mass city developments we create today, which are products of a planner's hand rather than of the slow evolution of time. They are idealistic and hollow, lacking the idiosyncrasies, internal fortitude, oddities, and character that cities need to stand on. It is these elements that make up a robust culture. It is also analogous to the human condition in many ways. Those who have fought, struggled, persevered, and overcome hardships develop into organisms of unknowable capacity and strength. They embrace their idiosyncrasies and offer them to the world. This is how culture evolves and progresses.